Hello, my name is Harpreet Sidhu, and I am the Publications Officer of the Corporate Counsel Forum of the IBA and also the General Counsel of Pet Health Inc. And you're going to be listening to a podcast today on sanctions screening for corporate legal departments. This topic is of significant relevance given the state of affairs in the world today. And today we are going to have a discussion with our guest, Sean Nealon, who is a senior partner at Stikeman Elliott. Sean is an expert on sanctions screening programs and provides legal advice in this field on a routine basis. He concentrates his practice on Canadian federal regulatory and criminal laws with regard to anti-corruption, national security, economic sanctions, commercial bribery, anti-money laundering, and proceeds of crime prohibition and merger control laws. And Sean has over 30 years of experience in this area. Thank you, Sean, for getting involved with the International Bar Association and agreeing to talk to us about this important area of compliance today.
Thanks a lot, Harpreet. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on, and I look forward to hopefully answering some questions for you.
Absolutely. So let's start off with, in a nutshell, tell us a little bit about what are sanctions and why is it important for in-house counsels to assess the need for any programs, i.e. like OFAC, so the Office of Foreign Assets Controls in the U.S.?
Yes, well, that's a good question. Let me start by saying that the idea of economic sanctions is to provide the government of whichever country, Canada in my case, U.S. in the case of OFAC, with tools to put pressure on foreign governments. Often this is done with the objective of encouraging foreign governments to alter their foreign policy, like stopping a war that they might be conducting, or to cease engaging in human rights violations, which are unfortunately common. Another objective of sanctions is to exclude persons who have engaged in corruption or human rights violations from, in my case, it would be the Canadian economy. But it's basically saying that people who've engaged in these things can't participate in the Canadian economy or to travel to Canada. The reach of sanctions laws varies. In the case of Canada, usually the way the sanctions are worded is it requires all persons in Canada to comply with them and also all Canadians outside of Canada. So different countries express that in different ways. But the idea is to reach, in essence, to persons within the jurisdiction of the sanctioning jurisdiction. Besides individuals who are required to comply with the law, obviously corporations are as well, and that's where it becomes more relevant for corporate counsel. And another area that's a little bit not foreseen in some cases is that Canadian individuals who work for corporations outside of Canada or non-Canadian corporations, their employer may not be subject to Canadian law, Canadian sanctions law, but those Canadian individuals would be subject to Canadian economic sanctions laws. And that's something that we see similar things coming up with the law of other jurisdictions like the United States. So for corporate counsel, it's important to at least have done some degree of assessment of the applicability of sanctions laws to their businesses. Could be one jurisdiction, could be just Canada, or it could be just the US, or there could be other multiple jurisdictions that to which a business must comply depending upon where it does business. In Canada, violations of Canadian sanctions are criminal offenses. And so it's both for corporations and for individuals. So it's important for corporate counsel to have a handle on the risk exposure of the business.
And given the increased compliance costs arising already for in-house counsel or their department, what sanctions compliance programs do you think are priority today with everything going on in the world?
Yeah, that's very much a question that has to be answered or addressed by corporate counsel on a case-by-case basis. First of all, thinking about, which jurisdiction sanctions laws is the business subject to? Today, both for Canada and other jurisdictions, the most topical issue and the thing that's driving a lot of activity are the sanctions that have been imposed on Russia by Canada, the US, the UK, the European Union, and other jurisdictions. And so it's important for corporate counsel to have taken stock of what the risk exposure is for the business. And it's important to take stock of that on a regular basis. Right now, it seems as though a lot of businesses are taking the opportunity, if you can put it that way, of the sanctions involving Russia to do that risk assessment, to consider whether or not the business is subject to sanctions or not. So, for example, Canadian businesses that have some degree of business with Russia, or perhaps they have Russian investors in the business, or perhaps they've invested in Russian businesses, or have some trade with Russia, it's now quite common for Canadian businesses to be assessing whether or not those activities are prohibited by Canadian sanctions on Russia, or if they're located in other jurisdictions, US sanctions or UK or EU or what have you. So there's been a lot of activity going on in that area on a compliance front in those 6 months since the war started. The other thing to keep in mind here is that although now we're really focused on Russia a lot, there's sanctions regimes of Canada, the US, other jurisdictions on many other countries, including Iran, North Korea, and Syria, just to name a few of the more commonly relevant ones. And there's also anti-terrorism laws, which look a lot like sanctions, but they're directed against terrorists or terrorist organizations. And then thirdly, there's another type of sanctions law dealing with corruption and human rights violations in Canada. That's the Sergei Magnitsky law. But all of these things have common characteristics in that there's individuals or organizations that are designated in pretty much all of these cases. And then in some cases, there's other types of sanctions, like sanctions on certain industries or certain areas. So, for example, there's sanctions that basically prevent doing business with the Crimea region of Ukraine that's currently controlled by Russia, or with the two areas in the Donbass that are operating under governments that are recognized, I think at this time, only by Russia, or maybe one or two other jurisdictions, but not by Western jurisdictions.
And given that so many of your clients are corporations and companies, what do you see as the top challenges for them in managing their sanctions or compliance programs?
Yeah, well, there are a few, and that's a good question, because it can be a complex area, and it's one of those things that at first it seems like it's hard to come to grips with, but usually, often with the help of counsel, it's possible to triage in a sense and do a quick assessment of the key things that the business has to pay attention to. So the first thing there would be determining which jurisdiction's sanctions laws apply to the business. I mentioned that earlier, but it's quite important to understand that up front. So for example, a business might have to be concerned about Canadian sanctions laws, for example, but also sanctions laws of the US. And it's really important to understand that, because the sanctions laws that are imposed by Canada and the US, while similar in many respects, are also different in some important respects. And the same is true for the UK and EU sanctions. So the first is to understand, the first challenge is really to understand what laws apply. Secondly, it is true that sanctions programs are becoming more complex. So historically, much of the focus, not all, but much of the focus, leaving aside export controls, which is a different thing, but much of the focus was on designated individuals and entities. And that is still true. There's a lot of, for example, in relation to the Russian sanctions, there are now over 900 individuals designated under Canada's sanctions on Russia, for example, and 250 Russian entities. But in addition to that, there are also restrictions on debt and equity financings. There's restrictions on the provisions of certain services to Russia. There's restrictions on the sale or transfer of goods and technology for use in the oil and gas industry or for use in weapons production. There's restrictions on docking in Canada, ships that are tied to Russia. There's restrictions on luxury good imports and exports, petroleum imports, aviation and aerospace insurance. And then, as I mentioned before, the embargoes on certain parts of the Donbass and Crimea. So for someone looking at this for the first time, it can seem quite challenging, but really, it's usually a relatively straightforward matter, asking a few questions to help corporate counsel understand which things they really don't have to worry about, which things they need to consider further. Another challenge I would say that businesses face is screening counterparties. So basically, the idea here, I mean, a lot of these would be customers, for example, just determine whether or not any particular customer is a designated person with whom it would be prohibited to have dealings of certain sorts. And screening can be a challenge. And so, for example, a business might have one new customer a day or, you know, one new customer a second or even more than that. But the good news here is that the tools to assist businesses in completing screening to identify designated parties are getting much better, and they can be integrated into various company systems and to a certain extent can be automated. One more challenge I want to mention, and it's a bit of a Canadian issue, but it comes up often enough, and there are similar issues arising in Europe, for example. But here the issue in Canada would be dealings with Cuba. So Canada has a law that blocks Canadian entities from complying with the U.S. embargo of Cuba. This creates challenges because some Canadian entities are required to comply with that U.S. law, generally because they're controlled by U.S. persons. This is a complicated and quite challenging area for corporate counsel whose businesses may be considering doing business with Cuba or may, in fact, already be doing business with Cuba. I would say that's one area for corporate counsel to pay attention to as a priority. And if they aren't yet doing business with Cuba, to perhaps take some advice before heading down that path.
That's really good advice, Sean. Naturally, my next question is going to be about inspections or enforcers. So when they come knocking at the door regarding potential non-compliance with sanctions, what should our corporate counsel colleagues be looking out for?
That's a good question. And it's good to think about this, or at least have some ideas as corporate counsel what to do when law enforcement arrives, really whether it's sanctions or other matters. It's never a happy moment, particularly if law enforcement is arriving with a search warrant that they're going to execute at the business's premises. The business may well have done nothing wrong, but there's a criminal investigation. All of a sudden, it's aware of that investigation, and law enforcement is there looking to identify and seize documents, generally electronic documents these days, that would be responsive to and within the ambit of the search warrant. It is a stressful situation. Staff are generally stressed about it. Decisions have to be made quickly. And at the point in time when law enforcement arrives at the door, there's a lot of unknowns, really pretty much everything usually. So there's a few key things that corporate counsel can do at that point. The first is really to stay calm. It's easy advice to give, but perhaps difficult advice to take. But really, it is important because decisions have to be made quite quickly, and it's better to make decisions with a calm state of mind and also to hopefully have that calmness radiate out to other key people in the business who are going to have to address or consider what to do in response to the search warrant. The second thing is to call counsel immediately. That it's really important, whoever the outside counsel is for the organization, to reach out to them as a first priority, because it will take time for potentially, perhaps the lawyer that you call, the corporate counsel calls, isn't the person that's going to handle the matter. They need to perhaps find that person. The business needs advice basically immediately. So it's really a good idea to make that call. And I would say the third thing, which is certainly true under Canadian law, and I suspect the law of pretty well all other relevant jurisdictions here, would be to not obstruct investigators. In Canada, that's a criminal offense in and of itself. So you have to be very careful to have that in mind. The other thing in Canada these days, which is a new development and I think quite interesting and something the corporate counsel should be aware of, is that there have been amendments to the Special Economic Measures Act, which allow the Canadian government to obtain a court order for forfeiture of assets of designated persons. So the idea here is that the Canadian government will ultimately be able to seize and dispose of assets of designated persons and use the proceeds from those dispositions to reconstruct Ukraine or any other jurisdiction within the scope of the statute. But Ukraine, I just use as an example here, or victims of human rights abuses or corruption. So this is quite a new development in Canada. I think Canada is keen on being in a leadership position here, so we may well see other jurisdictions taking similar steps. But the point here is that the RCMP in Canada, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Federal Police Force, is empowered to assist the government in identifying these assets. So that's another reason why law enforcement might come. And in some cases, of course, they are not interested in the organization, but believe that the organization may have information that is relevant to an investigation they're conducting in relation to some other persons or some other business. Even there, I think it would be important for the business to first take counsel before to consider whether, and certainly before cooperating with law enforcement, that would, I think, be pretty standard advice.
And in your experience with working with corporate counsel and advising them, how often do you think corporate counsel should do a sanctions risk assessment?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it has to, I think, be considered partly in the context of what the business has done in the past, how long it's been since it has taken stock of its sanctions risk exposure and its compliance activities, and what's been happening lately in the sanctions area. So, for example, I would say that if a sanctions risk assessment hasn't been done in the last 6 months and the business has any involvement whatsoever with Russia, I would think it's a good time to be checking, to be considering whether the sanctions sanctions compliance activities are sufficient. The same is also true in relation to Belarus, because many Belarusians, individuals and entities are sanctioned due to Belarus's cooperation with Russia, but also Ukraine, which comes as a bit of a surprise to some folks, but the rationale there is that there are Ukrainian persons and entities who have cooperated with Russia in the current war in Ukraine, which goes back many years, of course, back to 2014 or thereabouts. And therefore, there are some Ukrainian individuals and entities that are sanctioned. And as I mentioned before, there are three regions of Ukraine currently controlled by Russia that are sanctioned as well. I would say a good rule of thumb is to at least think about a sanctions risk assessment on an annual basis, sort of absent this current event-driven type of compliance check. I think it's worthwhile at least thinking about it. I'm not saying that means doing a full review of the program, but at least corporate counsel should once a year be, or perhaps on an annual basis, let's say, to be more specific, to at least ask the question, are we doing enough? Do we need to check? Is it time to do an update of the sanctions compliance area? And I think that's generally true for many regulatory areas, at least I would say under Canadian law, for things like anti-corruption or anti-money laundering. And then the last thing I think should be mentioned in relation to sanctions risk assessments is that it is really important to do compliance training for individuals, because there's a lot of expectations now on businesses and the people that staff them to comply with different laws, many of which have criminal penalties in the event of a breach. And so I think both in the interest of the business and in fairness to the employees, it's important that they receive compliance training. And it doesn't, you know, it needs to be tailored to the business. It does not have to be overdone, but it has to be enough so that business people understand, you know, the people that operate the business understand that these laws exist, that they must comply with them, and will help them identify issues. So that if somebody sees a proposed business activity, let's say it's a proposed transaction with Russia to take a current example, well, that's one where obviously now the business needs to think about whether or not it's compliant or not and probably take some advice. So it helps businesses, people really who are running the businesses or involved in sales or developing corporate opportunities, understand that there are rules there which will hopefully help them identify proposed activities, take them to corporate counsel for a consult, and many of which will probably be fine, but allow them to identify collectively the ones that are really potentially a serious problem. And then if they are unlawful under the law of Canada or the US or whatever jurisdiction might be applicable, to not engage in them and thereby avoid criminal exposure, both for the organization and for the individual. So I think, in short, that the risk assessment should also be tied to an assessment of whether the compliance training is up to date.
Well, that's really good perspective. Thank you, Sean, for your valuable time today and this wonderful insight, guidance, and advice. And I certainly hope our corporate counsel lawyers and our IBA members will find this podcast most helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Harpreet. It was a pleasure to be here today.